welcome to What the Bleep Are You Watching? A podcast where we watch a film and tell you why the bleep we watched it. I am Sean Grayson. This is Thomas Drake and Mason Todd. And we watched...
It ends tonight. Who do you work for?
Batman, under the red hood. Dun dun.
I'm ready.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Got that out of your throat there?
Yes, gotta get the Batman out of my throat.
So, we wanted to do a Batman movie, and this was, I think, the one that we really wanted to cover, even though there are lots of stuff we want to get to, but, like, Under the Red Hood is just, like, I think, the quintessential DC Batman film.
Yeah, well...
Of, like, the animated, like, the ones that they bring out.
The DC animated.
The direct-to-DVDs, because I'm not counting, like, Mask of Phantasm or Lego Batman, the theatrical run, things like that.
I was going to say, this is the direct-to-DVD. I'll agree with that.
There are good ones, other good ones, but this is, like, the one that kind of kicked off a lot of the DC Batman animated movies that would adapt other Batman comic stories and things like this. This is really the first big domino that fell to allow them to do that.
This was the first one that was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone was talking about this one.
They had a great cast. You know, Bruce Greenwood, for the first time, stepped in as Batman. I remember that was kind of the only thing that I remember. A lot of the internet was kind of like, well, why couldn't you get Kevin Conroy? Bruce Greenwood steps in and does a really good job. You know, they have Neil Patrick Harris, who was at the time in the middle of the How I Met Your Mother craze.
Yeah.
Jensen Ackles in the middle of the Supernatural craze. John DiMaggio, who is one of the greatest voice actors of all time.
Yeah.
I was literally right about to start Adventure Time, I believe, because this came out the same day that debuted.
Yeah, it was John DiMaggio's IMDb page is just, oh yeah, you did something that I love over
somebody. Yeah, he did everything.
And before this, he would have been in Futurama as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
As well as Gears of War, Marcus Fenix.
Oh yeah.
And for me, who loves Final Fantasy X, he voices two characters in Final Fantasy X. So.
Oh really?
Two main characters. Yeah, you can in your party. You know, you have three characters in your party, and
two of them
can be John DiMaggio.
Damn, they should have cast a third.
he is just such a good voice actor, and they were all stepping into, I guess, you know, Ackles and Neil Patrick Harris weren't necessarily stepping into roles that we'd seen a lot of great voice actors before done it. We'd seen it kind of done in Jason Todd / Red Hood and Dick Grayson / Nightwing. You could put anyone in them, not to say that they aren't doing good, but anyone, there wouldn't have been much of an outcry. But Greenwood coming in to voice Batman, and John DiMaggio coming in to voice the Joker.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, oh, huh. And this is before they really started getting Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy back a lot for these sort of things.
Yeah, that's true.
Because remember, the Killing Joke was huge in terms of, like, everyone was excited because they brought back Conroy and Hamill
it. The reason people were really, like, not keen on it was because Kevin Conroy had come back to Batman just a couple years earlier to do Gotham Knight.
Yes.
But that was kind of, that had a bit more of a budget. It was a bit more experimental.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this was the start of, like, the yearly releases.
Yeah. And DC at this point, their film universes were kind of disjointed in terms of, like, their live action stuff. Yeah, the Dark Knight trilogy was big. They had Superman on the horizon coming out with the reboot. Green Lantern had not that long before come out and existed.
Yeah.
That's
as nice as you can say about.
It came out after.
Did Green Lantern come out after this?
Yeah, Green Lantern was 2011.
Oh, that's right, it was.
So Green Lantern was on the horizon. I always picture that, but yeah, you're right, First Flight did come out after this. I always picture this coming before First Flight, or after First Flight.
Huh.
That's it. But yeah, it's my point in all that, even if I got the years kind of wrong, is that the DC film universe was a little... We weren't sure what was going on. And the animated universe, while they had some good stuff coming out, they were really waiting for that good banger movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which they arguably just knocked out of the park a couple times. times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, in a row. Because the early 2010s DC animated movies were just banger after banger after banger.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Red Hood, Justice League Crisis on Tours, Green Lantern First Flight, Batman, Superman, Public Enemies, all just right in the same couple years.
All around the same time.
Would the Dark Knight Returns movies been around that
they
time,
were
too?
Quite a bit later. They were like 2015? 14 or 15?
14, I believe.
Yeah, I think 2014, because year one was 2013, and then they did the Dark Knight.
Was year one? I thought year one was 2011.
No, I thought regardless of the years on this, there are a lot of them, but they were going to be doing a lot more. This is the first big comic known series they went to adapt.
Yeah.
Because everything else had been kind of like the early Justice League movies had been kind of takes on either the animated movies or Crisis on Tours, which was kind of or Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was kind of, you know,
a crossover
mm-hmm. event that was less of like adapting anything that they'd had in the comics and more of just kind of doing an animated movie that you would be familiar with of what was going on. This took the infamous Jason Todd death.
Yes, one of my like top comic book stories mm-hmm. ever.
The infamous Jason Todd death and brought him back to the forefront in a much, much better way than the comics ever did.
Yeah. Yeah. As a Red Hood fan, I agree.
Remember, in the comics, Superboy Prime punched Jason Todd back to life.
Yep. Yep.
In the middle of the final battle, Bloodhaven gets nuked.
Oh, God. It's literally a haven of blood.
So just imagine Batman and Red Hood are duking it out, and there's just a big, bright light over the horizon. They're like, what the fuck?
What was that?
Yeah, it's a... by involving... Ra's al Ghul and the Lazarus Pit is a lot better than Superboy Prime punching people to life.
Yep.
But they brought them back in a way that works and told a story that we, you know, it was an adapted story, but making that necessary change because, man, this movie would have been weird at the beginning if it was like, Jason Todd was alive because Superboy Prime punched.
That is true. You almost think, it's almost like, because the Lazarus Pit was a thing at that point, right? Why didn't they just use it before?
Well, remember that Jason Todd, the reason Jason Todd came back to life and why the Superboy Prime stuff was because the universe, DC got themselves in a crazy pickle, more or less, in that they were telling a story about infinite universes and multiverses, and they were running out of things to tell.
Mm.
And Geoff Johns basically was like, it's not a good story, but I can fix all this, and which would then lead into them doing Blackest Night and Brightest Day mm. as their big crossover events and things like that. But basically it was Superboy Prime brought the universes back together.
Mm. Fun.
And in that, certain characters came back to life.
Okay. The whole thing's so fucked. Infinite Crisis essentially reestablished the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole point of it. So, Superboy Prime shattered reality, and that shattered reality caused a whole bunch of ripple effects. Because comic books. There you go. That's a short and simple explanation, because comic books.
Brought it all back together.
Comic book
Jason
logic.
Todd was alive. Yeah, it was basically DC was like, we don't have any answer. We don't know what to do left, to do anything at this point. The story can't go any further. This can't do any more. We're really stuck. Like, this is bad. We've written ourselves in a corner. And that's how they fixed it. And they brought it back to square one, and then they brought out arguably my favorite comic arc ever. So, Blackest Night. the Green Lantern across all of the, you know, Green Lantern Corps and multiple of the other DC Comic Hero comic books.
Mm.
But enough about that, and how about we get back into this movie?
Yes.
We went
somewhere else there.
Well, you know, sometimes it's fun to meander through comics because...
Comics are cool.
They are. They're weird.
They're confusing, but they're cool.
But they're cool.
Yeah. They're weird, they're dumb, and I love them.
Yes.
But this movie, we open up on that familiar scene. You know, that familiar place. Ra's al Ghul, we see him, something bad has happened. Basically, he's like, the Joker has taken the boy, is more or less what he's saying. And we have kind of that... The replay of the iconic scene of Batman not making it in time... as Jason Todd is bludgeoned and beaten and then exploded.
Which hurts more, A or B?
backhand this is,
or front hand.
This is not a detriment to the movie at all, personally. This is just something I noticed. Jason Todd gets beaten to death, blows up, and Batman's holding his body. He's in remarkably good shape for being at the epicenter of an explosion.
Yes.
He should look like the... He should look like that... You know what he should look like? He should look like that mummy that they just discovered recently. That's what he should look like.
It's one of those where
he picks him up and it's just his head and his neck.
It's where they were wanting to recreate the iconic cover of the comic. That, and I know why, but yeah, you are totally right.
I was going to say, it's not actually a problem, because even if it was, that's a problem the original story had too. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, speaking of the original story, so as everybody knows, this was something that the fans voted on. The fans voted on Jason Todd's death, and they voted for it. And I was thinking that there was something that crossed my mind as I was driving over here. I'm not normally one to fall into conspiracy theories. However, do we think that there was some foul play in there?
No, because they wanted Jason Todd to live.
Yeah, so legitimately, there's actually a special feature on the Blu-ray of it. And so watching the behind the scene and the creator of Jason Todd talking about how heartbroken he was at the vote and how he kind of feels like there was some miscounts. That it maybe wasn't actually the count that they came out with, but that it was not maybe intentionally miscounted, but it was maybe miscounted on it.
It's just DC intern on 3 cups of coffee, just totally missing it, totally miscounting.
And the other thing to remember is there wasn't a huge turnout on the votes in general. It was not like sometimes portrayed as like thousands of votes came in and there was just so many for no. It was a close vote. It wasn't like, you know.
I think there was like, I don't know exactly, but there were probably a couple thousand, but I would also be surprised if there was like 800.
Yeah, it wasn't like this, like, you know, oh my gosh, you know. 10,000 votes came in and 9,999 were for him to die.
I really do wonder what it was like to be some parent and all of a sudden your child runs down the stairs holding like a post-it and it's like, what are you doing, little Timmy? I'm voting for a child to die. Oh. Yeah.
I'm voting to kill Robin.
And Jason and Todd...
It's like, no, he's a dick. Oh, okay, it's good.
Jason Todd was polarizing because he wasn't Dick Grayson. He was very different. He wasn't... Especially, he wasn't the Robin people were used to. But he's probably one of the first examples of a minority being very loud about a certain character and the majority actually being like, he's fine. Like, he's not bad.
Most people just didn't give a shit.
Yeah, like, most people read the comics like, he's fine. He may not be my favorite, but he's fine. And then there's, like, the select few, they're like, he's the worst ever. Oh my gosh. DC Satan should burn for me. Yeah. It's one of the first examples that I can think of like that, you know, like, vitriol towards a character that, like, most people are like, yeah, he's a fine character, he's whatever, you know.
Well, that's another reason why I think the votes for him dying won, because most people didn't give a shit.
Yeah, but the vitriolic minority came out for him. But
anyway, back to the movie.
Back to the movie, Jason Todd is dead.
Jason Todd goes boom, and we cut to years later.
5 years later, to be exact. Currently, all the crime bosses are meeting.
As they do.
Kind of a little bit similar to as in The Dark Knight when all the crime bosses
meet.
Joker reveals himself.
Careful not to blow this out of proportion.
Red Hood comes in. Less magic tricks and more, hey.
Decapitated heads.
Hey, you're going to work for me now and I get 40%.
Yeah, like, that's the difference between the Joker and Red Hood. Joker goes in and he's a little bit weird, but you know, he's still a threat. No, Red Hood comes in and he's just like, here's a bazooka. Give me your money.
Here's a bag of heads and AK-47, go nuts.
And the important thing is he promises them protection from both Batman and Black Mask.
Yeah, that's
who are both in it, that the gangsters are like, well, you know, we can't turn because, you know, Black Mask or Batman will get it. He's like, I got this, don't worry. So, we cut to the docks where Batman is tracking a shipment coming in.
Every bad thing in these movies always happen in the docks.
Look, the Gotham shipyards are probably the worst place anyone could ever be.
Between the two animated Batman movies that we've had, they both had big scenes at the docks. They should just get rid of the docks if they're that bad.
Gotham shipyards legitimately is where all the crime happens. all Batman should just literally just be camped out at the shipyards 24/7. He cleans up so much of the crime if he just stops the shipyard.
There is literally a place in Gotham City called Crime Alley, and there is more stuff going on in the docks.
Anyway, they're transporting the person.
Yep.
Yes. Oh, they're transporting a Mazo, the human android who has never been designed as well as he was in Justice League Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a scuffle, Batman and a Mazo, and who joins him but Neil Patrick Harris.
Dick Grayson. And Patrick Harris is perfect as Dick Grayson's voice.
I love it.
He's voiced a few other DC characters over the time.
Yeah. Honestly, my favorite of his is Justice League New Frontier, where he voices Flash.
Yeah, he's done Flash. Did he do Green Lantern once?
I don't think so.
I don't think he did. He's done a couple other characters in
he's
that.
He's done Spider-Man.
He has done Spider-Man. I think my favorite of his comic book characters is this one here. I think he is a perfect Nightwing voice.
He's like, you know when you like see a celebrity and you're like, oh, they don't age. Neil Patrick Harris, you hear his voice, and his voice doesn't age.
Yeah.
Like, his voice can fit into, like, any age range for a character.
He has that innocence that Dick Grayson kind of needs, that Nightwing kind of needs, that like that differentiates him very much from Bruce, in that like he's got a, you know, Dick has a much more optimistic outlook on things, and so like it's a great voice for it because it just fits him really well. Nightwing and Batman do eventually take down Amazo,
mm-hmm.
and they're sitting there, they're talking, and then things start happening.
They interrogate the bad dudes, hang Amazo's corpse over him, which, fuck.
Yeah, it's really...
And they're like, what are you gonna do? And then they start to drop his corpse on them. That's a baller interrogation move. It reminds me of, like, the interrogations in Arkham Knight, where you have their head underneath the Batmobile wheel. And they're like, start talking.
And then one of their heads get exploded.
Yeah.
If they get shot, and oh look, there's Red Hood on the rooftops with a sniper rifle.
So we get a chase scene where Batman chases him all around into the chemical plant.
This is one of these scenes with Batman chasing Red Hood are some of my favorites because it shows like how equally matched they both are. Like Red Hood knows everything that Batman is going to do before he even does it.
Yep.
And that's not usually something that happens with Batman.
It's something that in the really good Batman films that pushes Batman is when somebody is a step ahead of him.
Yes.
There's a step ahead of Bruce. That is what a lot of times makes helps Batman. You know, we know his intelligence, we know his strength, we know his ability to do it, but somebody is just slightly ahead, either because they have intimate knowledge of him, or because they have just the slight advantage on him.
Yeah.
And we get that a lot right here. Red Hood escapes at the explosion at the chemical plant, which is the same place where the first encounter with the Joker happened.
Yes, where Red Hood became the Joker.
Became the Joker, yeah.
You know, interestingly, as much as I like the actual Red Hood's outfit, I don't know. There's something about that classic Red Hood outfit
there is something
with the suit and the tie. And
it
everything.
Feels a very goofy old Batman that I kind of love. Like you could see Adam West fighting that Red Hood. Adam West.
True.
Fighting that Red Hood, I could see it so much. Yeah, I do really like it.
God forbid Jason Todd's in the Adam West show. That's what he wears. He has fucking squirt guns, Nerf rifles.
He has like a Star Trek phaser.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So they go to the Batcave. Nightwing's a little beat up, a little hurt. And Batman basically is like, well, drug trafficking is up a lot in Gotham since Red Hood took over, but crime is down quite a bit.
Wait, isn't drug trafficking a crime?
I think he means violent.
Like that specific.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And so drug trafficking, but total crime is down.
Okay,
so.
Gotcha.
One crime, yes, goes up, but
everything else is going
the
down.
Some of the
gotcha,
whole. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And he's like, well, we need to go talk to the original Red Hood. We need to go talk to the Joker.
Yes.
Yep. To Arkham we go.
And they go to Arkham, and Joker's just sitting there, and they show him Red Hood, and he's like, who the fuck is this?
He's like, he looks fun. How's it going, Batsy?
Yeah.
Want to hang out? Are we best friends yet?
Did you get my Valentine's Day card?
John DiMaggio just... I mean, Joker just really does not care about Red Hood. And I really do like John DiMaggio's Joker. He's not one of my favorites, personally, but I do really like
him. He's probably not my top three, but I do really love him.
But he has possibly one of my favorite Joker lines when Batman slams him into the wall and he goes, "Think about it. If I was under that hood, why would I hide it from you?"
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Batman's response is just like, well.
Yeah, he's right.
The thing about DiMaggio's Joker throughout this movie and here and there is... I don't think he's... As I said, he's not my favorite Joker voice. He's not my... probably not even my top three. But he does give off that, like, Joker element of, like, I'm your friend, Batman. I'm your only friend, Batman. Like, he plays that... The way the tone of his voice is, like, always, like, he is just playing all the time.
I compare him to Mark Hamill's Joker the same way that I compare Troy Baker's Batman to Kevin Conroy's. Is that it's very good, but that's mostly because a lot of it is coming from... Mm-hmm. Mark Hamill.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to Mark Hamill's performance. Not saying that's a bad thing at all, but that's...
Yeah, similar performance, if not a similar voice, if that makes any sense.
Yes, yes, exactly.
An important thing from this scene is the Joker does taunt Batman about Jason's death back in the time, and more or less is trying to get Batman to kill him. This is going to come back very importantly later on.
That's a big thing about theme of, throughout this movie is Batman having to face his greatest mistake.
Mm-hmm. We get some Black Mask, who is in this movie.
Yes, and unlike in when he was in Birds of Prey, very thick Cajun accent.
He does have quite an accent here.
unlike when he was in Arkham Origins, is actually allowed to do something.
Oh, a lot of his doing stuff in this is just yelling and screaming a lot of this movie, but the voice actor, I don't know who does Black Mask, but he is, he's going all out. So
he's
like,
going ham.
He is going ham on it, and he's having fun. Black Mask needs to be. Black Mask is one of the most over-the-top villains out there.
Because Black Mask is ultimately like an old-school gangster.
Mm-hmm.
Black
mm-hmm.
Mask would fit just as well as a Dick Tracy villain as he would a Batman villain. Kind
of. He kind of feels like he is a Dick Tracy villain.
Especially in this.
He does. God, I want to watch Dick Tracy. Anyway.
We'll get to it.
Soon.
We'll get to it, yes.
So Black Mask is basically like, I don't like this Red Hood. Don't like this.
He's taking all of my people.
It's not
taking away business.
It's not here, but Black Mask in this movie has one of the lines that has lived rent free in my head for ages. I'll talk about it when we get there. So.
But unfortunately for Black Mask, Batman and the Red Hood have his office bugged.
Yep, which is that's funny. That's funny as shit to me.
They both thought to do that.
Yeah.
Red Hood shows up, hijacks a helicopter, and Batman tries to chase him, and Nightwing. They both are chasing him.
Yes,
and
Nightwing helps with the most powerful weapon available. Staples. That was easy.
That broke you?
We get Batman trying to lasso Red Hood and him perfectly cutting it before it goes taut.
Before it goes taut.
Before it tightens around his leg, cuts it.
He cuts it, and Batman is... That triggers some stuff in Batman.
It's a really good bit of animation here where Batman's eyes don't get wide. He just looks up like...
Yeah.
Well.
Like, nobody does that. Nobody knows how to do that. Well, one person knows how to do that, but he did. I'm not sure. Okay. And they pursue Red Hood until they get down. There's explosions, and they get down in the...
they get down in the train
station. The train station. And before the train's coming along...
Red Hood says, "You haven't lost your touch," and he gets cut off by the train.
Yes.
Gets cut off by the train. They go back to the Batcave.
Nightwing's in bad shape.
Bad shape, and
he breaks something.
I think it's his ribs are hurt. I think because he's got wrapped around his chest.
And he does have a splint.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
He's hurt.
I was like, something breaks.
He's hurt, and this is, I think, the last scene he's in the movie. I believe.
Yeah, he's not in much of this.
He's not in much of it.
Yeah, I think he's the last one, which makes sense. A lot of these movies will bring in a Bat character that we know or familiar that is on the good side for a little bit of it, and then, you know, by the second half they aren't in it as much.
I mean, it's also, this is not a very long movie.
No.
The there's nothing for Nightwing to do in the climax, so...
No.
Unless you want to be like Joker, oh, you activated a bomb somewhere. Oh, damn it!
And both Batman and Nightwing are like, dude, his skills are really similar to ours. Like, what he's doing is really similar to what we do and how he does that. And Bruce is overly analyzing the last bit of dialogue that is said, you know, when he says, you haven't lost your touch. And so he's playing it over and slowly taking out different noises. And when he takes out the train, it says, you haven't lost your touch, Bruce.
Which, yeah. Fuck Batman. Fuck Batman with this easiest shit editing software. You're a piece of shit.
For real. For real.
Listen, all I'm saying is if I had the Bat computer, I wouldn't be using it to fight crime. No, I'd be using it for my own home movies if he can edit audio this great.
I'd just be like, hey, Batman, you want to come edit my podcast? Come on. Hey, Bruce, you know what? The crime fighting stuff,
how about you pay me to edit the podcast?
We're done. This crime fighting stuff is dumb. Gotham's never going to get fixed. Come and edit our podcast, Bruce. Come on.
This is a great time to introduce our new sponsor, Wayne Enterprises.
only 3 million for a computer.
When Thomas is driving around town in the Tumbler, we'll know.
Hey, did I say I hated this? I lied. This shit fucks.
Wait, I can destroy things? Now I like it.
But yeah, the reveal is great.
It is legitimately great.
Especially if this movie was my first exposure to Red Hood Jason Todd. So when that scene dropped, I was genuinely like, oh!
It is a pretty great... like every time a villain figures out who or knows who Bruce is, and Batman figures it out, it's always a highlight. I remember, I think it's specifically of like Batman Beyond: Return of the Joker does that really, really well.
Yes,
the Batman story arc endgame. It's this really great scene where Joker is invading Commissioner Gordon's house. Commissioner Gordon's on the phone with Batman. He gets knocked down. Joker slowly picks up the phone, goes, "Hello, Bruce," and hangs up. And Batman's just like, oh
God. It's so good. Every time it happens, I'm just like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really good. And at this point, we get some kind of like flashbacks to Batman teaching Jason how to cut the rope.
Yeah.
Before it gets there. There's some really good, like, young Jason, young Robin moments in here.
Which, you know, I'm glad that they included a lot of this. They did. I don't think they really had to, but I'm glad that they did anyways, because it establishes more of that relationship that they have.
Because
if you didn't see that, it wouldn't be as impactful.
Because a lot of it, we can infer a lot from this movie as well as knowing from comics, you know, knowing that, like, Jason and Dick were very different. And Batman's relationship with them were very different. Now, he has caused a lot of trauma on Dick that he has tried to repair, and there are other movies that work on when Dick is like, oh, God damn it, Bruce. what have you done for me? Yeah. Meanwhile, Dick is more like, Father, why have you punished me so all this time? And Jason is, why have you abandoned me, Daddy?
Bruce punishes Dick too hard for the stuff he does. Meanwhile, with Jason, now he's in the right for punishing him because it's like, hey, he needed to go down. You shattered his collarbone.
That's a thing. that they do in this movie where he's like, yeah, you're going too hard.
In retrospect, with modern Batman media, especially like the Arkham games, it's like, bullshit, that's too hard.
Yeah, but in the way Batman is like.
Yeah, but in the way Batman operates in this movie, it makes sense.
And it's really good. It's a good, you know, that Batman was trying. Bruce was trying to be as much of a father as he could for this this orphan. That, like, you know, he's not just adopting Robins to be his sidekicks. He is adopting them to be a part of his family. It's just that Bruce is also a fundamentally broken human being. And, you know,
I was going to say, the problem is Bruce did not have a childhood. He went from toddler to adult because at 8 years old he became a man.
Yeah.
For better or worse.
Yeah.
So we learn after that we cut to crime bosses getting beaten up by Black Mask's thugs and about to be burned when the Red Hood intervenes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually a trap, and he's being attacked by the Fearsome Hand of Four. I had to look that up for a second.
What's the name of it?
That's right.
Those weird ninja fuckers.
Yeah, that's right.
They basically are, like, in any anime movie, the big bad of the anime movie has, like, four henchmen with weird powers.
They always have, like, four original henchmen.
With weird powers, and that's what these four are.
They're the Team Rocket of Batman.
They're there just to...
You know what they are? They're the fucking card gang from the second One Piece movie. That's who they are.
And they're just here because Batman and Red Hood are going to team up to take them down.
Yep.
It's
a pretty good
fight. It's a good fight. Also, it's just got a great, you know, Jason being like, you know, took you long enough.
Yeah, it's like, are you proud of me now, Father? What the hell are you doing?
And it ends, Jason does kill.
Jason kills a guy, and Bruce ain't happy.
Nope, Bruce is like,
Maybe not.
I have one rule, child. One rule.
And you broke it.
Just because you came back from the dead doesn't mean you can break my one rule in this house.
Just because you came back doesn't mean everyone else can. He doesn't have a head now, Jason.
But also from it, Batman gets a blood sample from the crime scene and does confirm, hell yeah, that Jason.
Yep. That is one Jason Todd.
One of my favorite reveals of the movie, one of my favorite shots of the movie is Batman's looking at it, it's 100% confirmed Jason Todd. You hear a clatter, Batman turns and Alfred sees it.
Yes.
And just the look on his face is, we're going to have to fight him. And it's so depressing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Because, of course, Alfred Risley isn't in this movie very much. He's very limited. But, of course, Alfred had a relationship with Jason. Of course, Alfred was the grandfather or the uncle or whatever, you know, in those weird little family to these kids. And so, like, yeah, he... Seeing that, it is a great moment because you know, of course, Alfred is heartbroken at that reveal.
Yeah, and again, just some wonderful animation. Again, his face alone tells you everything you need to know.
Says it all right there.
We learn that Black Mask, shipment has been destroyed, and he is...
And this is the point where he says the line that has lived rent-free in my head since I've watched it, where he goes, I don't think you understand. When I say dead... I mean deader than dead. Beaten. Broken. His head mounted on my wall kind of dead.
Yep.
That's such a villain line.
Do not ask me why, but that line in particular has just lived rent-free in my head.
I think it's the way he delivers.
It's the delivery.
But also, it's a good line. It's a good villain line. Red Hood does not listen to his line and shoots a rocket launcher through his window.
Which, fun fact, if you're... playing or watching or whatever the 2020 Death of the Family multiple choice
pick your own adventure thing.
Yeah, there's a version of this scene where the door that blows off decapitates Black Mask.
Oh god, holy crap.
Yep.
Whoopsies. You didn't need that head, right?
And from this, Black Mask survives, but he's like, we're gonna need we're gonna need some help.
Yep.
I'm gonna go hire the Joker
because
that always works.
Yeah.
Yeah, Batman, meanwhile, goes to see Ra's al Ghul. He talks about how... Well, first they dig up the grave.
Jason's body and discover it's a fake.
Which, again, just a little nitpick here. Again, does not affect the movie at all. But it's like, Alfred's like, oh, good, he's still in the grave. Alfred, you know that's a fake. The body would be decomposed. It's been 5 years, Alfred.
Yeah, that is really weird. That was a little weird.
You can't pickle a person.
Like...
What is it, Pickle Me Elmo?
It is. Pickle Me Jason.
Oh. But yeah.
Yeah, then he goes to Ra's al Ghul and basically is like, what did you do? And he's like,
I felt bad that I killed your kid.
So Batman, you were doing things that were not helping me. I hired a clown, and then I felt bad about hiring a clown, so I put... Your boy in the Lazarus pit. And
I thought it was setting up a birthday party. I told him I wanted him to die laughing. I kind of got mixed messages.
And, you know, coming back from the dead, does something to one's mind a bit,
very unintentionally funny bit. Jason Todd goes ballistic as soon as he gets out of the Lazarus pit, gouges a dude's eyes out. But as he's running, Talia just pulls a fucking piece, and I just find that so funny that she's like, well, fuck this kid.
Yep.
Roz obviously stops her, but it's very unintentionally funny for me.
I imagine being like, Batman doesn't need this Robin. I'm going to make him a Robin. Anyway.
He can always have more.
Back in Gotham, the Joker has obviously double-crossed Black Mask.
Of all of the bad guys in Gotham for Black Mask, you can go to Bane, you can go to Killer Croc, you can go to Poison. There is this whole rogues freaking gallery of Batman villains that Black Mask could have gone to. No, we're going straight to the Joker.
Do you want the real-life explanation or the in-universe explanation?
I want both.
In-universe, Joker knows Batman best.
Fair enough.
Simple as that. Joker knows Batman inside out. Up, down, all around. He knows Batman the best. In-universe. They didn't want to hire another voice actor.
Okay, fair enough.
It's what the Arrested Development quote, though. Like, people always say they can do it. and do it. Do they do it? No, they never do.
Bat Family Arrested Development.
It's obviously the Joker's going to be... go rogue. Like,
Joker's got a Joker.
It happens, but it's also kind of just show that because Ra's al Ghul hired the Joker, and it didn't go well. So, and as we learn, this is all a part of Jason's plot, because he is the one who is truly hiring the Joker. He's putting the seed in all these sort of things, because he wants to recreate the scene.
Yep, great line where Joker's like, oh, I'm gonna light these guys on fire, and Todd's like, why do you think I care? Like, I really don't care.
He's like, and basically Joker's like, Batman's so much more fun than you.
He's like, you know what? You suck, dude.
I want to have fun. Fine, they can be lit on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, Batman comes in, drops some fire retardant on them.
Mm-hmm. It truly would have been a gruesome death for Black Mask and his goons. Like, legitimately, the Joker would have being stuck in a truck on fire like that, that would have been gruesome.
Again, comic book movie, so it doesn't really matter. That one dude on top is definitely dead.
Oh, yeah. I feel like some of them are already dead in there, but...
the Black Mask and his assistant, so...
Batman tries to get the Joker from Red Hood, but once again, the Red Hood... is a step ahead.
He's always a step ahead.
And cuts the wire from Emmett, sending the Joker into the river.
Yep.
And he's like, come to Crime Alley, Batman. Well, Red Hood says that. Come to Crime Alley, Batman. If you want the Joker, come to Crime Alley.
Which is always the best place to go.
They meet on the rooftop. They have a little bit of a scuffle. Batman loses his cowl. And Jason's like, oh, you lost your mask, I'll lose mine.
Yeah. And then that's where the actual reveal happens.
Yeah, it's a pretty good fight. It's a solid, like, it just, all the fights are well animated, even the little ones. Like, it's very well animated. Yes.
This does have a pretty wonderful bit where they get launched into a bathroom and have a bit of a close quarters combat fight.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought up earlier that Jason's always one step ahead of Batman. The one thing he can't beat him at is hand-to-hand combat, because Batman is finally like, fuck this shit, and beats the dog out of him.
This is a great moment for Bruce over Jason here, is that Jason, because of the intimate knowledge he has of him, has had the one-up on him. But the thing that Jason isn't, he isn't Bruce.
He hasn't
been through the years of battle. He's been warped by all of this. He's been, you know, he's very good at what he is. But there's a reason Batman is Batman. There's a reason that Bruce sticks on this and can't ever pass on pass it all down to Dick, because he's like, Dick can't take on this responsibility. Mm-hmm. He can't be what I am, mm-hmm. which we're going to get in a second of why he can't go down the road. And why he is the only one who can truly do this at this point, because he is the only one who understands the suffering you have to go through to be this, and how you still have to hold yourself back because it's going to go bad.
He beats the dog out of Jason, bursts him through a wall. They end up in an apartment. Jason pulls a gun, and Batman finally breaks. He's like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I let you die. I can't make it up for you enough. And Jason's like, I don't care you let me die.
I've forgiven you for what happened, but what I can't forgive you is why is he alive?
Yeah, why, yeah.
And Joker's just like, oh, hey, the party's here.
The animation of Joker's face on this, and John DiMaggio's line's great, but the animation by itself is so good on his face. He looks around, he's like,
oh, I'm here now.
Legitimately, this may be the happiest moment of Joker's life. He is tied up and beaten up. He's been beaten with a crowbar. Jason Todd, the earlier scene we did have recreation of
the scene where he beats
beating Joker. He's been beaten up and shoved in a closet. And when he sees Jason and Bruce, or Batman, I guess Batman's about the cowl back over his face, but like he sees the face again, he's like, "This is the great. I'm in the middle of family dispute. I have never been happier in my life, and maybe I've never been more turned on in my whole life. I don't know."
It is a moment where, again, going back to that 2020 Death in the Family movie, there's a moment from there that I kind of wish was in that scene. There's a moment where Jason and Joker are talking in a diner in that movie. It's one of the several endings you can pick. And there's a point where Joker realizes it. He realizes who he's talking to. And he just smiles and goes, "Boy Wonder."
It's so good.
I kind of wish that moment was during the interrogation. When he's beating him and he's like, "Come on, give me a hint." And he's like, "Okay, A or B," or something like that. And he just like spits out blood and he goes, "Boy Wonder."
Yeah.
I kind of wish that had happened, but that's just me being me.
This is where Bruce Greenwood absolutely eats as Batman here. Like, just incredible, because Jason is distraught. He is still a child in a lot of ways. Distraught at why his father didn't fly off the edge and go get revenge. Why didn't you kill the man who killed me? Did you not love me? Yeah. Like, did you not love me enough? Because if he had done this to you, I would have gone out there and beaten the living shit out of him.
Yeah. And Batman's like, "No, I can't do that." Why? Because you're a code? Because you're... No. It'd be too damn easy.
He says, he says it's so... He's like, "No, it'd be so easy to kill him. It'd be so easy. But I can't go down that road."
Bruce Greenwood's delivery here makes this one of my favorite Batman monologues of all time. There is not a... He says there is not a single moment where I don't think about putting him through every torture that he has inflicted on every other person and finally ending him. But I know if I do that, I will never go back.
Right there
is why Batman is such a great character.
Yes.
Because also, fuck Twitter anyway.
Because there is this element of anyone who has talked to anyone who has struggled with addiction in their life, whether that is gambling addiction, drugs, alcohol, or any form of addiction, will say, why can't you figure out how to control it? Like, why can't you control it? One's not going to hurt you. And they'll tell you, that is what will start it. And that is what Batman knows. He knows that, it would be really easy just to kill one man. And then wouldn't it be easy just to kill one more? You know what? I've stood there. I know that if I start, I will not stop.
So basically what we're saying is all the Batman needs is a support group for potential mass murderers.
I feel like he's a bit further down than most.
Fair enough.
It is a point where he cannot go. Maybe there was a time when he could have. Maybe there was a time, but it is a long time.
And he knows at this point, definitely not now.
He knows at this point he cannot go down that road, as much as he even knows, and him saying it would be easy to kill the Joker. He deserves it. I should have killed the Joker, but I know myself. I know I can't. And if I do, everyone else will suffer.
Yeah.
And Jason, one of the things that makes this great is Jason doesn't get it. Jason's just like, "I don't. That doesn't make any sense to me."
It's like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Like, I'm not talking about killing Dent or Cobblepot or anyone else, just him. And Batman's just like, no, you dumb fuck, I can't do it.
And, yeah, it is.
Boy.
There is, in a lot of ways, this is the response to a lot of people who say, well, Batman should just kill the Joker. In a lot of ways, it is very much a response. And Jason Todd, in a lot of ways, in this response, is the people who don't understand it. The people online or anywhere that have read it don't understand why Batman can't kill.
Hey, there's a reason why Batman killing Joker is declared a victory for the Joker. In every continuity where that's happened.
Yeah, it's because he wants it. The Joker would love nothing more than Batman finally breaking his rule on him. Yes. Oh, you've done it to me.
That's why whenever, in several other stories, like I particularly think of the Batman-Punisher crossover, because yes, that exists, where Punisher's like, yeah, I'll just fucking kill the Joker. Joker's scared there, but not because he's scared of death. He's scared because he wants Batman to do it.
He wants, that's the only thing he wants.
This is honestly something that we should say, for... Anybody listening to this is like, why doesn't Batman just kill the Joker? Watch this movie, and you will understand.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
If you don't understand it after watching this movie, you're just stupid. I'm sorry. It's just how it is. Like, they're...
Or you've just willingly...
showing it out for you.
Or you've willingly chosen to take the character in the direction that you think in your mind. Yeah. You willingly decided that I don't care what other people said, this is what I think for the character. And I get it. I do get and understand there is a legitimate reason to say, would Gotham be better if Batman killed Joker? Yes.
But Batman wouldn't be better.
And Batman might make the world worse because he cannot control what he would become if he does that. And that's the entire point and the entire thing of Batman. His rule is not just because of some moral code. It's not some, I have to be better than them. It's literally, if I'm not, I will be them.
The moral code is Superman.
Yes.
The moral code is Superman. Superman doesn't want to kill people because he genuinely thinks everyone can be redeemed.
Mm-hmm. He's the Boy Scout.
Batman doesn't kill people because he knows he will become a villain if he does.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That he knows his own mind, he knows who he is, and it is so well done in this movie. And yeah, Jason doesn't understand and tries to shoot Bruce.
He tosses Batman a gun, and he goes, okay, you choose. I'm going to blow this clown's face off if you don't shoot me. And Batman's response is to drop the gun and walk away.
And Jason then, like the petulant child he is, no, not fair, I'm going to shoot you. Batman dodges, throws a batarang right into the gun, boom.
And once again, John...
So cool.
And once again, John DiMaggio as the Joker is so great, because he's like, wow, really, with all of this stacked against you, you still found a way to come up on top. Yet we all still lose, and Jason activates a bomb.
Yep. And Joker is excited to die in a blaze of glory here. Yeah, Joker's like, you and me together. Yes, this is the only way. We must die together.
I mean, they're both green, kind of.
Yeah.
He tackles Batman, straight up starts strangling him. Like, we all go out together, one big happy family. Batman.
Again, this is the most excited Joker has ever been.
Batman punches Joker, grabs Jason, and he's like, no, fuck the clown. bails out as the building explodes.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow Joker survives because it's the Joker.
Yeah.
Batman and Joker survive. Jason's body is nowhere to be found.
Mm-hmm. And the we cut back to the Batcave. Batman is kind of just recovering from everything because he has been through an emotional dick-kicking.
I was gonna say, it's been a long day for Batman.
It's been a long day, and Alfred is basically like, should we remove the memorial display case of Jason's Robin? Should we get rid of this?
Yeah.
And Batman's, no. Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Jason's still gone.
Yep. And then it ends on a flashback of Jason Todd stealing the tires of the Batmobile.
Yep.
And their first encounter.
And the first time that he was Robin, he jumps around like a lunatic in the Batcave because he's so happy to be Robin, jumps on the Batmobile, and the last lines of the movie are, this is the best day of my life.
Great ending for this movie because it is Bruce coming to terms with accepting what happened those years ago and coming to terms that even if Jason was alive today, it doesn't matter.
It's also kind of ballsy for a DC straight to DVD animated movie to have such a bitter ending.
Mm-hmm. It's such a dark ending.
Yeah, like it's not even bittersweet. It's just bitter.
It's just bitter. There is no sweetness.
It's that he lost his son those years ago, and nothing will change that. Mm-hmm. But he has come to terms with it, and he's accepted it. Mm-hmm. And he'll hold on to those memories. He'll hold on to those memories of his kid. And he will remember him as his kid and love him as much as he can.
Yeah.
It's such a good ending.
It's so good.
This movie is really good.
It's so good. It's such a good movie. And it's probably like quintessential Batman, as we've brought it before.
Genuinely, top four Batman movies you need to watch. Mm-hmm. Not including The Dark Knight, because everyone talks about The Dark Knight. In my opinion, 89, The Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, and this.
And this, yes. Those are the four.
Absolutely. I think, especially of the DC animated, if you're going to pick out one DC animated Batman to watch, this is the one to watch.
Yes, that
is. You know, I think Mask of Phantasm does things just as well, if not better. It is fantastic, but that was a small theatrical run. Mm-hmm. I do think there are some later Batman stuff that are fine, and they do adapt some good Batman stories later on. But this is where they understand Batman at his core better than pretty much any animated movie has done since then.
Yes,
it's ironically this and the Lego Batman movie are probably the best understandings of Batman as a character.
Mm-hmm. As a Bat family, understanding Batman as a father, because it is hard. Oh, go ahead.
Everyone kind of pictures Batman as the edgy, brooding loner, and that mm-hmm. is a big part of his character. But another big part of his character is him growing out of that.
Yes.
And him truly learning that, no, I'm a dad. I'm mm-hmm. a dad. I gotta take care of my kids.
I gotta pay the taxes.
If this was something that was continuing on into other, like, direct tie-in movies and things like that, and going forward, then the next step would be probably introducing Damian and having mm-hmm. him actually where he is. Oh, that is my actual kid.
Yeah. What about Tim Drake? Nobody cares about Tim Drake. Ah, damn it.
But, yeah, that's Batman Under the Red Hood, a movie that we absolutely adore.
Yes. You can't tell.
And on this podcast, we ask two important questions of every film that we watch. The first is, how does this film hold up?
It's meh.
No, I was going to say, really, really, really well. This whole era of DC animated movies is so timeless, I think.
Yeah, there's a reason why it's just this chunk.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really good. Again, banger, 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 banger.
Because a few years later, the DCEU would be launched. You know, that's what would change and where the money going into it. They'd still be making these animated movies, and they still weren't there. But this is a time when there was serious money. This is where that's why people for a while during this era were like, "Don't worry about what's going on live action. DC has that animated stuff down."
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't like Green Lantern 2011? Well, Green Lantern First Flight
is right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't really like Man of Steel? Well, we got 3-4 Superman movies out for you to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, you're sad there's not a Wonder Woman movie yet? Well, there's a really good animated one. All mm-hmm.
You didn't like Catwoman? Well, you gotta wait a couple of years, but it happened eventually.
It did happen eventually. So all we're missing is an actual Flash movie.
Yeah, because Flashpoint's the only thing they've really done, isn't it?
Flashpoint is the only thing they've done.
Yeah, and that's a mixed movie that's kind of ugly.
Okay, completely off topic. I want a Flash movie that's an actual goddamn Flash movie. Mm. I like the live-action Flash. Yes, I'm fucking weird. I don't care.
Look, I like the live-action Green Lantern, so...
I was gonna say... You also like Batman and Robin.
Yes.
So...
I have great taste.
Yay, I'm not the loser tonight.
Anyways.
But, I want a Flash movie that's just an actual fucking Flash movie. I'm so tired of Flashpoint.
I am too.
Like, I get it. It's a very big story. It's an event that focuses on Flash.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, for the love of God, just give me something else. Have him fight Captain Cold or something.
I would love something in this sort of vein, in this sort of, like, Batman Under the Red Hood, deep evaluation of the character and who he is for Flash that doesn't really come as often from Flashpoint because you're enjoying all the cool multiverse changes, you know. And again, the Flashpoint Paradox movie is interesting. I think one of my favorite things from it is Thomas Wayne being Batman. Like,
yes.
That is legitimately one of the most interesting things that they've ever done. But I would love a Flash movie that would actually follow kind of along this sort of, like, obviously you're not going to get this type of story, but, like, that really sits and examines Flash as a character.
Yes.
Yes, obviously. Yeah,
But yeah.
Sorry, just completely
off topic. No, we all agree this movie holds up.
Yes.
It's got great animation. It's got a great cast. It is timeless in terms of Batman, and it is probably what really does say who Batman is, who Bruce Wayne is, in a way that very few have done.
Mm-hmm.
Our second question that we ask of every movie that we watch: what could movies take from this?
Okay, hold on.
We
can't all have the same one. Can't all say the getting Batman right. We can't all say it.
Well, I was going to say, aside from animated, more 2D animated movies that said thousands of times.
I have kind of a different one from that one. Kind of different from 2D animated, yes, different from Batman. I mean, I do have Get Batman Right, but that goes without saying. It's 2D animation.
You would hope that your Batman movie gets Batman right.
Yes.
Honestly, both DC and Marvel, just go back to doing shit like this. I don't need the animated movies connected. Marvel, just fucking do animated movies, for God's sake. I don't need them to be connected. Just do a story that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a Blackest Night movie that has no connections except, hey, it's Blackest Night. You know these characters. Let's do Blackest Night.
Mm-hmm.
Just something like that. I don't need them connecting.
Well, I said we're about to get, Infinite Earths.
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah. There's
going to be a 3-part animated epic or whatever.
Just
like, for the love of God, for one thing, that's way too soon. The Tomorrowverse that they're rebooting is, like, mm-hmm. 5 years old. Jesus Christ, guys.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and the first part just came out as part of this recording. It just came out
a couple
days ago.
That's right.
But yeah,
I hear it sucks, but I haven't watched it.
Unfortunately, kind of some of the big DC animated comic stuff recently, like the DC, like I like a lot of like the single story stuff, but a lot of the big DC adaptation ones have not been as good.
Yeah, a lot of the connecting ones are just not good.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't need 2-3 movies to adapt a comic book storyline. Like, if you're going to adapt it, just adapt it.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the story. Like, they did a 2-parter of The Long Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes sense.
The break in the Long Halloween story. I mean, and also, like, something like a movie like Batman Hush, I think should have been 2 parts because that movie feels very rushed, but also trying to make Hush a good character, and then the twist on that is the other thing.
We rolled Snake Eyes on both.
But I definitely see what you're saying. That like it would be very nice to see just these like standalone solo movies.
Yeah, and again, they don't have to just be Batman. Give me a Superman. Give me Wonder Woman. Green Lantern. Flash. Fucking give me a Hawkman movie or something. Marvel. Give me an animated Iron Man movie. Give me an animated Wolverine. Give me an animated Captain America, Black Panther, something.
Mm-hmm.
And just do them standalone. They don't have to be connected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My thing that they can take from it is when you're you can absolutely go away from iconic voices or iconic actors in roles and still knock it out of the ballpark.
Yes.
That, you know,
that is true.
That is something. Now, again, you have to do the casting has to be right. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to always fall back on, well, that person has always done it.
Even though I love him, you don't always have to have Steve Bloom as Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always need... Draw a blank.
Anyway. Obviously, now that Kevin Conroy's passed, we're going to have lots of different Batmans. Again, things like that. But like,
and we're also going to have a lot of different Jokers, because Mark Hamill certainly isn't returning.
Yeah, Hamill's not doing it anymore.
And that's something that actually I do love about the DC animated movies is... the different Batmans and hearing them and kind of deciding which ones I like and which one I don't. Like, well, we talked about Troy Baker's Batman when we did Batman and the Ninja Turtles, you know. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about Bruce Greenwood's Batman. We'll eventually talk about a Kevin Conroy Batman.
Probably we'll do Roger Craig Smith at some point.
Yeah, like, it's good to
see... Has he been in mm-hmm. movies?
Yeah, he mm-hmm. was in Batman Ninja and he's in Batman Unlimited.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
But, like, different voices are good. Like, it's okay to go out there. Like, no, I mean, if you're... I'm totally in favor of people getting their paycheck and getting to being able to do in an iconic role. But if you end up going a different direction, it's okay. You can find good people to voice these and let us see different interpretations, especially when you're doing maybe different looks of the character. Like, this one does a very different look for the Joker at the time. Yes. You know, and so John DiMaggio being a different look, a take on it, that's a good thing. Like, it's okay to, especially if you're a different look, to giving a different voice coming out of it. You can do that. And, you know, that. So that's my biggest take is, like, you can recast iconic roles. Maybe this is less of, like, replacing people that are alive, but all, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, recast old characters can be, we don't need to just AI generate or, you know, put new CGI DH people. Just recast people. It's okay. You're going to get good performances that are interesting and people will understand.
Yes.
Mason, what do you take away from this movie?
Well, see, I thought you guys were going to take the Get Batman Right route, so I'm going with that one. That's mine.
Just Get Batman Right.
Yes, just for the love of all things. We're back to like a good place with getting Batman Right with the Batman, and you know, hopefully that trend continues with Brave and the Bold. We're getting back to that, but you know, just get Batman Right. It's not that hard.
Yeah, get Batman Right. Understand who Batman is and what his goals, what is achieved, you know.
Yes.
And it'll be very interesting, you know, obviously with Brave and the Bold coming out, and we'll see what we get in Batman Part 2 if they do introduce a Robin in some capacity. But that change of that Batman as a father figure and role model is a very important one in the stories, which is one of the things that always a lot of times bothers me with, you know, with a lot of the Damian movies, is they just, like, they act like Batman hasn't been a dad before so often. And they're like, this is a big thing. Like, I understand it is different when it is your own, you know,
flesh and blood,
but it's not like he just doesn't know how to be a dad. I'm like, well, he did learn. We see this here. He is learning how to be a dad. Damian should be the one that's getting the most love and support, honestly.
Yeah.
At this point.
But yeah, I'm just like, forget everything that Zack Snyder has ever done with Batman and just get him right.
Snyder cut, but...
Okay, well, apart from that. But there's the one time that he got him right.
That's fair.
Yeah, just don't have him kill. And he's a good dad.
Yes, that's... Yeah.
God damn it, Zachary.
But yeah, what do you guys think? Let us know. Comment below here or send us an email to bleepyouplaying@gmail.com. Let us know what your favorite Batman movie is or what you think of Under the Red Hood. Is it one of your favorites or do you have one that you like more? Let us know. We would love to hear from you. That's either here on this Patreon or at bleepyouplaying@gmail.com. And we'll be back next time with... something movie related, yeah.